ね、なみき、あの、とじ、え、古人部地域やね。あの、地方だ。人場だ。人間の場合、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ、それ
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. So, in our context here of the penultimate chapter, that of Guru Yoga, last week we looked at the practice on receiving the four initiations. So, having made, as in the previous section, having made heartfelt requests to our Lama in the aspect of Guru Rinpoche, we then engage in the practice of receiving the four empowerments. So whilst one does the visualization, maintaining the visualization, one visualizes on the crown of Guru Rinpoche a white om, at his throat a red R, and at his heart a blue om. And then as one is reciting Guru Rinpoche's mantra, then light rays in corresponding colors shine forth from the three places of Guru Rinpoche and enter into oneself at those same places. And then doing this, one imagines that one's purifying oneself, as mentioned last week, as well as accumulating the potential to attain the bodies of the Buddha. And then at the conclusion of this practice, then one generates the thought that now I have received the four initiations. So that's what we looked at last week. So we'll continue now from where we finished last week, which is page 331 in the maybe third paragraph from the top, and the fourth line in. The paragraph starts whenever sickness obstacles, and then we have a few lines below that, four lines below that. So we're starting at the fourth line down in the third paragraph in here. There are times when things are going really well for us. So our mind is happy, our body is healthy, our virtuous endeavors, our practice is going well. So when life is going well and things are easy for us, it's quite possible that pride can arise, thinking that everything that is going so wonderful is due to my own inner good qualities, how amazing I am. So there is this danger that pride can arise when things are going well. So therefore, to avert this possibility, we should rather remind ourselves that what's going well for us, mental happiness, physical health, our practice going well and so forth, that this is due to the kindness and the blessings of our Lama. And if we then recall this, this will serve as an antidote to prevent pride from arising. And recalling our Lama with a mind of faith, and recalling with a mind of faith, recalling our Lama, then we can be aware that all that is going well for us now is due to the kindness and his blessings.
And then
The line that we're looking at here is, whenever happiness, comfort, and virtuous practices predominate, recognize this too as your teacher's compassion, and do not be proud or overexcited. So the line should be clear from what we've looked at, and then this term here, overexcited. So this is like expressions of exuberance, so facial expressions or one's physical behavior. So when one's really very pleased with how everything is going, then we may express this through exuberance. So at these times there is the danger of pride arising, and of course pride is an afflicted mind. And if we take pride in our spiritual development or our spiritual progress, or as we see it, the quality of our practice, this is actually a little strange, because pride being an afflicted mind, if we are generating affliction towards our good qualities, our spiritual development, this is really strange. And moreover, this mind of pride will actually serve as an obstacle to further spiritual development. Moreover, this mind of pride is likely to lead us to see more faults in others, to criticize others, especially if we don't believe they are giving us the praise, the recognition, the credits that we deserve. And so these are some of the faults that come from pride. So we need to be especially on guard for this when things are going well, because pride tends to rise in terms of how we see our own good qualities. Some of this we've looked at, some may make some sense, some may not. For example, if you're in good health, it may seem very strange to say, well, my good health is due to the kindness of my teacher, because I'm healthy because I've looked after myself. Or if our spiritual practice is going well, this it may seem strange to credit someone else, credit our teacher, because we are the ones engaging in the practice. So some of this maybe isn't so clear.
Mm-hmm.
Spiritual development or a good progression in our spiritual practice, but it should be quite easy to see how this comes about due to the kindness of the Lama. So we've come to know the Dharma through having come to this and other Dharma centers, but these didn't just spontaneously appear. They came about because someone came and found them, and in this case of this particular Dharma center, this was founded due to the kindness, the compassion, the wisdom of Lama Yeshe, and has been further developed through the kindness and compassion and wisdom of Lama Zopa. So that we all can come here and engage in developing a deep understanding of the Dharma, and thereby enabling our spiritual progression, we can easily see that it's directly related to the kindness of Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa, who founded and then inspired the continued development of this Dharma center. So we could even point to them and say they are the main causes of what we have here, and thereby are causes of our own spiritual progression. And likewise, we can point to many other people who have had great influence, such as the spiritual teachers here, or the people who taught Dharma here, as well as all those who are involved in making the Dharma center open and accessible to everyone. So thinking just a little bit more broadly like this serves to calm down any minds of exaggeration or pride in relation to our spiritual progression, and see that this comes about in dependence on the kindness of others, in particular the kindness of our teachers.
Now,
I'll So in these classes, we've often referred to the meditation on dependence arising, which is also the topic we've recently started or just started in our weekend teachings. So this is exactly what needs to be applied here, and to come to understand how our good qualities are come about independence on the kindness of our independence on a wide variety of causes. And in our particular context here, we're looking at the concept here, the practice of Guru Yoga. So we can see that us having the knowledge and the ability to engage in spiritual practice is due directly to having a spiritual teacher, and or to having people who have taught us the Dharma. So to have someone who can teach us the Dharma, one requires a venue, a place for that to happen. So we have this Dharma Center. And this Dharma Center came about, if we look for some primary causes, we could say, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, he gave a lot of advice, you need to do this, you need to do it like that. And when ideas were being formulated, they were always checked with him. So he was very directly involved. So I can clearly see the kindness and the impact that Lama Zopa himself has had. But Lama Zopa as well was acting in dependence on the kindness and the wishes of someone else, his own root teacher, that of Lama Yeshe. So in this way, we can easily come to understand through thinking on dependency or dependence arising, how a result depends on many different causes. And we can in this way come to understand how our own good qualities are dependent on the kindness of others, and kindness and dependence on many different causes and conditions. And then particularly in this context, we would reflect on the kindness of our Lama.
ne lama sebi ki chuswa da zuwa lama sebi ki din re lama shi ki din re sa wa du ngi di tu shi ge sam da na ga ju ge la mi ge tu shi re sam da be na ga ru shi ne ngi din ma tu shi ge ki tu shi ge ki tu san be ge ju ngi la ya ji ngi lap je ane ji ke ne ge ne ge din la ten ne ngi tu shi shin go ro da ne shin go di ane an cho so lya ngi di din ma tu shi she ra wa di chi da da de jong je nga she ra wa di ne lama sebi ki chuswa da zuwa lama sebi ki din re lama shi ki din re sa wa du ngi di tu shi nga shin she ra wa di ane nga kon ba ya du ane ji ke nga ju nga ge da bi ji ge ge nam ji tu shi ge din re sam ji ge din ro wa da ji ne za tu shi sam da na ga cha sa da na ga ju ge wi cha wa ga ne che bi ne lama ki din ba cha ru go re ch
talking about this now, I also see it as particularly relevant to my own situation. So I'm only able to be here and share my knowledge and experience with you because Lama Zopa helped create this Dharma Center and asked me to come. So I'm also, to have this opportunity, I'm also indebted to the kindness of Lama Zopa. And whatever knowledge and experience I have of the Dharma, when I'm talking to you now, I'm immediately reminded of the kindness of my own spiritual teachers in the monastery. It's only through their kindness and their continuous endeavor to impart their knowledge and experience that I was able to develop my own knowledge and experience. So this way of thinking, of recognizing in particular the kindness of our teachers in terms of our own spiritual development, is something that's imperative for all practitioners to do.
아니네. 아니네. 자당 안 되냐? 띵이진 공바. 띵이진 공비. 교독당 안에 진거로 수고 주나? 라미 투다 랑게 지바 예메도 세데 니루 따위 랑다 자신. 안에 세데 냠바 베자구로 치틀 자세. 내가 수고로 생각하는 게 변내다 예 아주 신의 주비 삼다에 내려와다 띵이지 신의 도시의 신의 띵이든 고묘도 안데 아직이야 징구 중하다 안다 되네 야네 니리아다 안데 심파 최지 띵이지 야고 고마도 해나 당하는데 삼나 갈레스나 어다디 지가제 고면나 야고 신의 용문도 아제 다디강아 두 선비게 샘야 땡이지 주투사 말에 샘비게다 샘야 당하는 주기
So read the next few lines, and for those of you with the book, I'll just change some of the terminology a little bit. During concentration meditation, whenever such states of mind as discouragement, weariness, laxity, excitement arise, merge your awareness inseparably with the teacher's mind. Rest in the view of the natural state, maintaining its innate brilliance. At the same time, say the Vajraguru mantra as a prayer and recitation. So the meaning of this is then, when one is engaging in meditation in general, or engaging in the development of calm abiding in particular, then of course obstacles, as we know from our own experience, do arise. We find it difficult, and especially how long it takes to develop, how long it takes till we become really, we can see progress. And this can lead to our mind becoming dispirited or wary. And it can certainly lead to us thinking, oh, this is just too difficult for me. I don't have the ability to do this. I don't have the ability to achieve to achieve success in this. And therefore, the thought to give up may well arise. So when we encounter obstacles, when we're finding it difficult, and we're perhaps feeling dispirited, then at that time, the advice here is to merge your awareness of your mind inseparably with that of your teachers. So to see, mix your mind and his mind, seeing them as indivisible. And what that means is that our teacher's mind is just like ours in the sense that neither are inherently existent. If I think of my teacher's mind that as an object appears to me, and like all objects that appear to my mind, they appear as inherently existent. So whether I think of someone else's mind, such as my teacher, or my own mind, it appears to me as being inherently existent or truly existent. But lacks true existence, is empty of true existence, empty of inherent existence. So in this way, my mind, my teacher's mind, are indistinguishable. So this is the meaning here of merge your awareness inseparably with the teacher's mind. Then once one has done that, bearing in mind that in this particular practice, we have visualized our teacher as indivisible from Guru Rinpoche, or an aspect of Guru Rinpoche, and therefore we would recite the mantra of Padmasambhava, or Mahum Guru Padma Siddhi Hum, and then we recite this mantra with the visualization before us, with an awareness of the indivisibility, or the indivisibility of our mind and our teacher's mind. In this way, we can eliminate the obstacles we're experiencing, or the difficulties that we are experiencing. So this here is how we can use Guru Yoga to overcome some of the problems that we experience when meditating. The text specifically here refers to a concentration meditation, or when one is trying to develop calm abiding. But as I said a moment ago, we should take this to refer to meditation in general. So whatever we are trying to develop, so if it's we're not engaging in the meditation of trying to cultivate calm abiding, but we're meditating perhaps on emptiness. And then if our mind is getting a little bit tired, then we're experiencing an obstacle, because now our mind is becoming lethargic or laxity is arising. Then we should, as is advised here, see our mind as indivisible, inseparable from our Lama, and make supplications to him. And in this way, overcome obstacles to our meditation. Or if we're engaging in meditation on love and compassion, we generate a strong wish, may all sentient beings experience only happiness. May all sentient beings be separated completely from suffering. And moreover, may they achieve the exalted state of a Buddha, a being that has the greatest form of bliss and completely separated from all forms of happiness. Meditating like this, then a strong emotion may arise in us and may lead to us being distracted or overly excited, our mind becoming agitated in the sense of being overexcited too busy, too excited. Or alternatively, we could just be tired and our mind could be quite dull. So whatever of these, or whichever of these or other kinds of difficulties we experience when we meditate, then we can apply this advice. Merge your awareness inseparably with the teacher's mind. Rest in the view of the natural state, maintaining its innate brilliance. And at that time, recite the Vajraguru mantra as a prayer and recitation. That's a practice that has not just been described. It's something that we can and we should apply in the perhaps in the opposite situation. So when we're engaging in meditation, let's say on love and compassion, or developing bodhicitta within ourselves, and the meditation is going well, our mind is not dispirited, we're not tired, the meditation is progressing well, then when as we go to the various stages of this meditation, generating the wish, may all sentient beings, all these sentient beings that I have a close connection with, the close connection through the relationship that we forged in previous lives, may all sentient beings experience only happiness. May they never experience a moment of problems and difficulties, but be completely freed of suffering. In this way, we generate love and we generate compassion, and perhaps taking it further to the generation of bodhicitta itself. So in other words, we're engaging in meditation on developing bodhicitta, and the meditation is progressing well without difficulty. But then we can, so as to speed the actual development of these minds, we can then generate the visualization of Chenrezig, the deity of love and compassion. We generate the deity of the visualization of Chenrezig, seeing Chenrezig as indivisible, inseparable from our own Lama, and then make supplications, heartfelt requests to our Lama in the form of Chenrezig, and we can engage in a recitation of Chenrezig's mantra or Mani Padme Hum. And we do this in the same way as we've been hearing, as we've just heard previously. But here we're doing so as to receive blessings and encouragement and create virtue in order to develop the realizations that we're striving to develop, such as love or compassion. And similarly, if we're engaging in meditation on the topic such as impermanence or selflessness or emptiness, then the meditation is going well. So just like we've heard, now that we're not getting tired or we're not feeling that it's too difficult, but the meditation's progressing well, then generate the visualization of Manjushri, seeing him, Manjushri, the deity of wisdom, seeing him as indivisible from our Lama, and then recite Manjushri's mantra, Omapatanadi, doing so as to generate blessings and virtue in order to be able to realize emptiness or selflessness or the realization of emptiness that much more quickly. And a further way that we can take this advice and utilize it is if we're engaging in meditation and it's going well, we can visualize any deity or a particular yidam or any deity that we feel a connection with, seeing them as indivisible from our Lama, and then in order to create virtue for our spiritual practice to go well, we make supplications and we engage in an activity which doesn't have to be a mantra recitation. We can maybe engage in prostrations, or we can offer flowers, or we can do circumambulation, etc. Any kind of virtuous activity. So what the advice I'm giving here is that with Dharma practices such as these and others, one can be and one should be flexible in their application. Utilize these practices in a way that works effectively for you, so as to turn away from non-virtue and to cultivate virtue in a manner that one individually, that is in accordance with one's own personality, and one individually finds effective. And the end of the paragraph, or the paragraph ends with, in this way, all appearances will arise as the teacher and deities. Everything you do will become positive. What is meant here by everything you do will become positive is that when one is engaging in such a practice, one is of course engaging with one's mind, and engaging mentally in this virtuous way means that our mind is engaged in virtue, in accumulating virtue. And when we're reciting supplications to our teacher, or making prayers, or mantra recitation, then our speech is also engaged in virtue. And then we may be joining our palms together with a mind of devotion, or in a respectful way, or we may be engaging in prostrations or offerings. And this way, with the door of our body, we also engage in virtue. So therefore, practicing in this way, whether to expel obstacles or whether to gain blessings and virtue for further progress, then everything you do will become positive.
Okay.
Now we come to a quotation from Jetsun Madaripa. As I walk, I take all perceptions as a path. This is how to walk, letting the six consciousnesses liberate themselves. As I rest in unaltered naturalness. This is the essential and absolute way to rest. As I eat the food of emptiness. That is how to eat without any dualistic notions. As I drink the water of mindfulness and vigilance. This is how to drink unceasingly. Kari Dempa Mepa, the Yule Jogde, can do some so
you do yeah migle gar nang ro su nang
ro ha 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 so you took then pa ma jo pa re
kan
ni nang ro ni ko so
you do re di thong ye ge she ba du so du so ra so du te thong ye ge she ba du ge re ge na you do ge re cha sa you do dan she ba du bo cha sa na yu dan jian le din du bo ma da gan lai ma du ba rang wen ni ma du ba de re ma du ba de ko rong gi ngo re sta cha sa zo lu din a chi re ko rong ngo wa da ga din ne yin ba na xin Nia Pasu Jodu Dinikari, Ton Nasone, Chisa, Nawana, Rangwen, Maduba, Tonsan, Tonpani, some Dakumku, yes, it.
So, Fukusan. First, look at the first two lines. As I walk, I take all perceptions as the path. This is how to walk, letting the six consciousnesses liberate themselves. So here, Malaripa starts out by talking when he's walking around or traveling, going from here to there. Then, of course, many objects are encountered, and they encountered in one. There are six types of objects which are encountered through six different consciousnesses. So this we see here in the second line, the six consciousnesses. So this refers to what we objects of form that we see. They will appear to sight consciousnesses. Likewise, objects that we hear appear to a hearing consciousness. Likewise, objects that we taste appear to a taste consciousness. And objects that we smell appear to the smell consciousness. Objects we touch appear to our tactile consciousness. And objects that we think about, or whatever we think about, that's the object, and appears to a mental consciousness. So six objects and six consciousness, five sense objects and one sense and their five sense consciousnesses, as well as a mental object and a mental consciousness. So amongst these six objects and six consciousnesses, whatever appears to our mind appears as being truly existent, but doesn't exist in this way. So whether it is a mental object, an inner phenomenon, or an outer phenomenon, an object of the sense consciousnesses, that appears to our mind as being truly existent, but doesn't exist in this way. The consciousnesses which apprehend the external or inner object, if we investigate those with another mind, we will see that they also appear to us as being truly existent or inherently existent, and they also don't exist in the way that they appear. So thinking like this is thinking in accordance with reality, that this understanding that the way things appear is not how they exist. Whether these are the objects or the consciousnesses to which they appear, none of these are truly existent. And this is what he's aware of. Malaripa is expressing that he's aware of as he travels or goes from place to place or from here to there. As I walk, I take all perceptions as a path. This is how to walk, letting the six consciousnesses liberate themselves. So, Pogosong, Pertudi, Yigyu Denge, Tiskyu Gin, Tisangi Kopodi Tistagin. So now let's look at these next two lines. As I rest in unaltered naturalness. This is the essential and absolute way to rest. So I'll read it twice more, but with an alternative translation, which may or may not be clearer. As I rest in reality that is unfabricated, or reality that is uncontrived. So that line, as I rest in reality that is unfabricated. And the second line, this is the mode of existence of the innermost reality, or the innermost truth. This is the mode of existence of the innermost reality, or the innermost truth. So in the first two lines, Milarepa was talking about when he's engaged in activities, he's walking around, he's moving, whatever. Now he's sitting in his room. And so when he's sitting in his room, then in the first line again, as I rest in reality that is unfabricated, or reality that's uncontrived. So what this means is he's been meditating on the nature of his mind. And he's come to see that the entity of his mind, or the essence of his mind, is that it is empty of inherent existence. So when he's meditating on the object of the mind, it too appears as being inherently existent or truly existent. It appears as if it is independent, as if it's not dependent on anything at all, but the mind appears to be self-existent. So like every object that appears to us, when the mind is the object that we're meditating on, it too appears to be self-existent. But through his meditation, he's come to understand that it is empty of existing inherently or truly. And rather, it arises dependently. It is a dependence arising. So this is what he's come to realize. As I rest in the reality that is uncontrived, or the reality that is unfabricated. So here he's come to realize emptiness, and his emptiness in terms of the object, which is his mind, and he's resting then in the nature of his mind. And then the second line, this is the mode of existence, or this is the way of existing, this is the way that the innermost reality exists, maybe we can say. This is the mode of existence, or the way of existing, of the innermost truth, or the innermost reality. So again, the meaning of this is, he's meditated, when he's sitting, then he's sitting and he's thinking about the nature of his mind, he sees that it too is empty of inherent existence, and then he rests or abides in this realization of emptiness, and that is the innermost meaning, or the innermost truth of the mode of existence. first two lines, Maripa spoke about when he's moving around, how he relates to whatever appears to his mind. Then when he's sitting, then he spoke about how he uses that opportunity to look at the nature of his mind. Now he talks about two activities that we have much familiar with and we do several times a day. And in the next two lines, as I eat the food of emptiness. This is how to eat without any dualistic notions. So here he's referring to when he eats and how he thinks and what thought process he engages into while he eats. As I eat the food of emptiness. This is how to eat without any dualistic notions. Or alternatively, instead of dualistic notions, we can say without grasping at the apprehender and the apprehended. So what this means then is that whatever appears to our mind, as we've heard, it doesn't exist in the way that it appears. So here the objects are what we're eating. So whatever we're eating, the food, as well as the taste of the food, whichever object, it appears to us as being truly existent. When we investigate, we see that it doesn't exist in this way. So while he's Milarepa is eating, he's aware of this, and he's aware that seeing the food, it appears to his consciousness as being inherently existent, and then another consciousness or another mind grasps at it as existing inherently. Same with when he tastes it, the taste of the food, that taste appears to be inherently existent, another consciousness grasps at it as existing in that way. So this is the apprehender and apprehended. The apprehended is the food or the taste, and apprehender is the consciousness that grasps at it as existing in the way that it appears. But then when he investigates and thinks, this food then, from it appears, this food or the taste, whatever the object is, it appears as if it is independent of causes and conditions. It appears to exist. It appears to be self-existent. It doesn't appear as if it depends on anything else. This food appears to be as self-existently delicious, or existently awful. However, the taste appears to us, or the food that we see appears to us, it appears to be inherently existent. But when we investigate, we can't find this. Rather, we see that it's dependent on causes and conditions, and therefore empty of true existence.
And
chikang tama lo pengpe?
Niga, andi yujie me ba, andi namju, na yuma chiba chang, yuma chiba tunglu re se de, tung se de na namju nenga to de kaka jidang paba zina jatung, chudung la kwa, dada tunglu re se de sam tangha re, nyamlin jeta re la, hong se de, nyamlin nga to ge, chudung na, chudu ka na ma zuru, rong na ma zuru korwa, jidang ta nga to ge nyamlin jeba na, jini ge,
And then the last two lines, as I drink the water of mindfulness and introspection. This is how to drink unceasingly. As I drink the water of mindfulness and introspection. This is how to drink unceasingly. So here, and this refers to, of course, whatever we're drinking, whether it's water, whether it's tea, whether it's beer, whatever we are drinking, then one should drink as is being described here in this verse. And that is to investigate what is appearing to our mind, and we'll come to recognize, rather, what appears to our mind, and then investigate. So this is very similar to what we've just heard before in relation to food. So whatever we're drinking, if we're seeing the object, it appears to us as truly existent. The taste of whatever we're drinking appears to be truly existent. And then we have a consciousness that grasps at it as such. So then with another consciousness, which here we will call introspection, we investigate. And we investigate its object or the taste of what we're drinking or what we're seeing that we're going to drink. Does it exist in the way that it appears? And we investigate with this mind of introspection, and we come to see, despite appearing to be self-existent or independent, it is actually a dependent arising, dependence on causes and conditions, whether it's the taste or the visual object. And therefore, it is empty of inherent existence, or empty of self-existence. And then with the mind of mindfulness, we hold this realization of emptiness. And we abide or rest in this understanding or this realization of emptiness. So here in this context, this is the meaning of the terms mindfulness and introspection. We use these minds, first the introspection to investigate reality, and then we use the mind of mindfulness to hold or to rest in, to hold this, to hold our realization of mindfulness. And this is how to drink unceasingly. This means the practice that is being described here, or this way of thinking, this way of meditating, this is what we should unceasingly engage in. Whenever we drink, whenever we eat, etc., this way of thinking we should unceasingly engage in.
Chick ne
The meaning then of this verse, to summarize it, is that when we're engaging in the various activities of our day, then a lot of objects are appearing to us, whether they outer phenomena, so objects that we can see, hear, taste, touch, or smell, or inner phenomena, so our various thoughts. Whatever object it is, that appears to our mind as being self-existence, as being independence, as being independence of anything other than itself, so self-existence, appears to be truly existent or inherently existent. So when we engage in activities, then many objects will be appearing in our mind, outer or inner objects. Here, we should follow this advice, reflecting on emptiness, reflecting on how they don't exist in the way they appear. And then, when we're not engaged in activities, when we're sitting quietly in our room and we're engaged in meditation, then we can use that opportunity to reflect on the nature of our mind itself and come to see that the essence of the mind is empty of inherent existence. The mind does not exist in the way that it appears either. So when we engage in this meditation, now of course it's the object's not an outer phenomenon, but an inner phenomenon. It is the mind itself. And we investigate this mind, we see first how it appears, looking for it, does it exist in this way, and we see that it doesn't. We come to understand emptiness. And then the other activities we do repeatedly in the day is eating and drinking. We reflect on emptiness in exactly these same ways. So the meaning then of all of this is whatever we are doing, whether we our daily activities, whether taking a break and eating and drinking, or we're doing our meditation, always keep our mind turned towards reality, coming to understand the way phenomena appear to us is mistaken. They do not exist in the way that they appear. And we think about this repeatedly, then this is what unceasing refers to, the very last word here. And doing this, we can also reflect now in the broader context of this topic that the only reason that we can engage in this meditation on emptiness, the only reason we can engage in such a profound meditation is due to the kindness of our teachers. Moreover, all this virtue, this accumulation of wisdom that we engage through meditating on emptiness, this too is due to the kindness of our teacher. Okay, so I'm going to read the whole thing, which is good, because the order is a little different. paragraph. What is more, once you enter the secret mantra Vajrayana, it is essential to receive empowerments which mature and liberate. They repair degenerated and broken samayas, and enable you to meditate on all the paths of the generation phase, the perfection phase or the completion phase, and the great perfection. They prevent obstacles and errors from arising and allow all your attainments to develop more and more. In order to engage in the practice of secret mantra Vajrayana or in tantric practice, then one first has to receive an initiation or an empowerment. If one hasn't received an initiation, then one is not allowed to engage in the practices of secret mantra or vajrayana.
Once you enter the secret Mahayana, it is essential to receive empowerments. They repair violated and broken samayas. So the meaning here is that when one receives an initiation, then together with that initiation, one will receive commitments. So what that would entail is the teacher giving some instruction. For example, you need to meditate every day on emptiness, or perhaps you need to meditate every day on bodhicitta. So this is the instruction that the teacher is giving to the students who are receiving the initiation, and the students, by receiving the initiation, agree to those commitments, and they make the commitment or the promise to fulfill the instructions of the teacher. And but then if they don't do so, and they feel, oh, can't be bothered, don't feel like meditating on emptiness today, or a bit busy to meditate on bodhicitta today, then that promise they made, that commitment they made, degenerates. And then the way to restore this degenerated promise that one has made is to once again receive the initiation and thereby recommit to fulfill the promises that one has made.
What is more, once you enter the secret mantra vajrayana, it is essential to receive empowerments. They repair degenerated and broken samayas and enable you to meditate on all the parts of the generation phase, the completion phase, and the great perfection. So the meaning then of this new part of the sentence here, they enable you to meditate on all the parts of the generation stage, the completion stage, and the great perfection, is that in order to be able to do these particular meditations that are included in the generation and completion stages, or in the great perfection or the Dzogchen practices, one needs to receive the appropriate initiation. So of the classes of Tantra, this is referring to those which are of the highest yoga class of Tantra. Only having received such an initiation is one
only having been initiated into such a practice is one empowered to engage in the practices of the generation stage or the perfection stage. If one hasn't received that initiation, then one is not empowered to engage in those practices.
Now the last bit, and I'll read it in the same order as it comes in the Tibetan. They prevent obstacles and errors from arising and allow all your attainments to develop more and more. And so I suppose therefore it is essential to receive empowerment which mature and liberate. So the meaning here is quite clear that if one engages in these practices referred to here, but hasn't received an initiation, so practices of the generation or completion stage, then one will not progress in one's practice. But if one has received the initiation, then one can do so. So therefore, it's imperative that one first receives an initiation before engaging in these practices. Otherwise, one will not progress.
Quotation in the secret mantra vehicle, there can be no accomplishment without empowerment, or there can be no attainment of cities without empowerment. For that would be like a boatman without oars. So the analogy, I think, is quite clear.
And there's again another clear quotation. Without empowerment, there's no accomplishment. You can't get butter or oil from pressing sand.
Receive an initiation, then one requires a teacher to bestow the initiation.
The initiations can be divided into three types: that of the basis or ground, that of the path, and that of the result. So a basis initiation, a path initiation, a resultant initiation. So the basis initiation is mentioned here first. The empowerment that we receive when we are first introduced into the mandala by an authentic Vajra master is the ground or basis empowerment.
dire lame na ju la tine jin sha la de ba me ba rani ji wang xi le ba lam ji wang yin su da su su gi ji rim na zu ren yam len che che ane su su gi ane da lame zhen le wang xu mo zhe su su gi ji rim zu ren yam len ju gom che ne ga chuo ga duan che wang ye wang xi le jiao ruo de lam ji wang su
The path of the self, our path initiation, and I'll read from the text, the fourfold empowerment that we take by ourselves when we practice Guru Yoga, without depending on anyone or anything else, is the path empowerment. So what is referred to here is, so one has initially received an empowerment, so that was the basis empowerment, and now one is engaging in practices of the generation or completion stage, and then actually engaging in, so moreover than is said here, actually engaging in the practices of generation and completion stages, this is like receiving an initiation. So doing these actual practices, it's like receiving the initiation, and as it says directly here in the text, what we heard presented last week or in the previous paragraphs in this section, this is a way to receive the four empowerments. So this then is the path initiation or the path empowerment.
And in it, Gabriel, the Unguru, Nanjumi, and Dajuglin, or
the Amazon Nels, what me?
Nanjuma, Dajuglin, said Doa.
Karilin. So this, what is specifically being referred to here, is the practice of the self-initiation. And this then exists for the many highest yoga tantric deities, such as Vajrayogini, Yamantaka, and so forth.
And then
the resultant initiation, the empowerment that we obtain at the moment of the ultimate fruits, called the great ray of light empowerment, or the empowerment of indivisible profundity and radiance, is the fruit or result empowerment, perfect and total Buddhahood. So the third type of initiation, if we divide it in these three ways, is that of when one attains enlightenment itself, that then is called the resultant empowerment.
Kasu Jiangxu Sem Gomia Tang, and chiwa mitaba samtaya de kiwi shinyin samtaya de dinige samta jamro samta dusi samdang gures jamje nyije samdang gures jamje da nyije jashu semda dusi samma ta wa che ane ji ha jan ya gom de ba na andi ni ba ya ko tun tu ma de che da dine za de jashu semda nyije da jashu sem dige za ma zhe sha an dong yu de bi dong yu de bi she ra dige ma zhe samta ji an di gan lia ane
And then the next paragraph, these empowerments possess three inconceivably profound characteristics. They purify, perfect, and mature. Even when you are doing the main practice, it is a mistake to dispense with any of the preliminaries. It is particularly important when you are meditating on practices such as the generation or completion stages, always to start each session with the path empowerments of Guru Yoga. So this paragraph is quite clear, but the main point that is being made here is that when one is engaging in a practice, it's imperative not to think, oh, the preliminaries are not important. I will just focus on the main part of the practice. So in the context of highest yoga practice, if one just focuses on the deity practice, but not the preliminaries, then your practice of the generation or the completion stage will not go well. So it's imperative to include the what here is referred to as preliminary practices, such as refuge, the kindness of the teacher, impermanence, bodhicitta, emptiness. These are important, and in particular, for tantric practice to go well, the reflections on bodhicitta and emptiness are indispensable. They are essential for one's practice to go well. So we've completed now the presentation on Guru Rinpoche, this Guru Yoga, and this is a particularly important practice. So just to summarize this practice in its briefest form, whatever deity one practices, for example, if one engages in practice through visualizing, say, Buddha Shakyamuni, the meaning here is that to see the deity or Buddha Shakyamuni as being indivisible from one's Lama. And this is, again, if one is engaging in practice of Chenrezig or Manjushri or Guru Rinpoche or whichever Yidam, to see them as indivisible from one's Lama. So that is the briefest possible summary of the practice of Guru Yoga that we've looked at in some detail over a number of weeks. And tonight, that is what we've completed this important practice.
Kasur hati tadi ngoci way sam gomje. Shanda dige de mare sam sam jena di jigo mar. Lama kane yine sosugi da sosugi jeo tu lama di ane kachi le sanje kumu yina da mena de sosugi ngoi ne ane rahal ya ane ke jamba sanje jumnen di ki ma sosul ya ane keshu dhubiya tanda la dhubi ma chuba na sha ba chire sam ji ngo an sang yu chum nen di re sam ji sam da ji ji ba cha sang an ngo ji ba sam da ya re.
Just a brief further point to make.
many of you will have more than one teacher. And here, it's important to guard against seeing some as higher, some as lower. Seeing, oh, this one is very famous and therefore is important. Or this one has been particularly kind to me and the others, well, less so. This is a mistake, and we should guard ourselves from thinking in this way. Rather, if we, whichever deity again we're visualizing, say Buddha Shakyamuni, see that deity as being indivisible from all our lamas, and we see that all our lamas have played their own respective role in our spiritual progression, but see them as equal in their kindness. Even if some have played a larger or smaller role, always be aware of them as kind and see them as equally so. And not just the aspects of kindness, but also that in terms of their essence, they are all indistinguishable from our deity, from our Yidam. So, which, however many teachers we have, in their essence, they are indistinguishable from the deity, and this is important to bear in mind, and not to see one as higher or lower than the other. Just to conclude by reminding of the importance that whatever virtuous activity one engages in, whether it's receiving teachings or dedicating teachings or one's daily activities, to do so with the motivation of bodhicitta. And when in the morning, when one does one's practice, one generates the mind of bodhicitta, and also being aware of the kindness of one's lama. And if we do some deity practice or visualization of a deity, such as Buddha Shakyamuni, to always see them as indivisible from our lama. And then, when we engage in whatever virtuous activities, either during that meditation or post-meditation, then ensure that our three doors, our body, speech and mind, are engaged in virtue. So this means keeping our mind turned towards the Dharma. In our speech, in our practice, we can recite mantra or supplications, but ensure that during the day our speech is virtuous. And in terms of our physical activities, then in our practice we may make supplications or do prostrations, and in our activities in the day to ensure that they stay in the direction of virtue. And in this way, we'll accumulate vast stores of merit. We'll receive, in our practice, blessings from our teacher in the aspect of the deity, all so that we can continue to spiritually progress. And this way, especially when we combine, or when we include in our practice, purification practice, such as with the four opponent powers, purify all our faults of the three doors, like we heard in the practice in more detail last week. And we do so not just for our own betterment, but in order to be of greatest benefit to others. So we'll finish here now. We are at the conclusion of the presentation on Guru Yoga. Then next week we'll look very briefly at this next section, the history of the advent of the early translation doctrine. In the English we'll probably just look at this one paragraph, and then we'll move forward to the final chapter, which is on Poa, or transference of consciousness, on page 351. So that's what we'll mainly look at next week. This is us? Okay. So I'm sorry it's gone a little bit late. So if you have questions, if you can hold on to them till next week. Thank you very much. Well, it's good to see you all tonight.